From Vision Australia Radio, it's time to open the cellar door and uncork a classic on Heard It Through the Grapevine.
Hello, hello, hello. I'm Michael Hintz, the velvety voice of Vino, with another Heard It Through the Grapevine on Vision Australia Radio and coming to you nationally through the Community Radio Network. And it's hello from my producer, the ebullient Tristan Hodson. Looking $1 million today, Tristan. Today we're going to delve into the intricate and intriguing world of wine marketing and distribution with wine marketing executive and expert Frank Kraps. But first, my wine of the week is a SEP 2013 Grüner Veltliner. Now sealed with a screw cap, alcohol by volume 12%, from the SEP Moser Estate, made from fruit grown on the steep rocky terraces of Rodendorf in Kramstal, Austria. Grüner Veltliner counts for, I think, just about over a third of all Austrian vineyards, if it's not that, it's Riesling, plantings. The wine's known for its elegance, spicy minerality, and firm acidity, and especially it's a very food-friendly wine. It works well with traditional partners for mineral-rich, high-acid white wines like chicken and fish. It can also handle more challenging matches like asparagus. I always used to say when I was a kid, asparagus, and artichokes. Remember that old joke, artichokes three for a dollar at the supermarket? Anyway, get back to it, Michael. Generally, Grüner Veltliner ages well. It sheds some of its initial, can be a bit vegetal to begin with, but it ages well and it gains spiciness and complexity with a bit of cellaring. This 2013 SEP Grüner Veltliner, it's pale straw in colour with a greenish tinge, leading to a citrusy nose with a palate of grapefruit and lime, overlaid with a bit of spice and mineral. And that leads to a steely, dry, crisp acidity. It's a perfect partner for mildly spicy fusion cooking. An excellent value for money wine for those seeking an alternative to the unwooded Chardonnay or the ubiquitous Sauvignon Blanc, which is on must be year 14 of its 15-year popularity cycle. Never mind the pronunciation, Grüner Veltliner, just enjoy drinking the wine. Now it's my pleasure to introduce Frank Kraps, Executive Chairman of the Jovel Group of Companies. Frank is going to shed some light on the intriguing world of wine marketing and distribution and the role that plays in getting wine from the winery into your hands. It's much more complex than you think. Frank's vast experience in strategic wine marketing, distribution, logistics, and in fast-moving consumer goods generally makes him eminently qualified to give us an insight into the latest trends and, in so doing, reveal just how important good, savvy marketing and distribution is to, or for many of Australia's winemakers. In the process, Frank will let us know who's drinking what styles of wine these days and what are the emerging wine varieties to look out for. Frank, welcome to Grapevine.
Thank you, Michael.
Now, firstly, tell me about yourself and your background in wine marketing.
Well, I'm currently executive chairman of the Jovel Group, which has a number of companies underneath that. One is a wine group called Kasama. Mm-hmm. They have two national on-premise companies. One is Red and White, and the other one is Mezzanine. Both wholesalers, and they both sell premium wine. Very few wines they represent and sell. Retail under $20, mm-hmm. And you know the brands they represent is over 150 brands exclusively in Australia. Some of the ones you may be aware of or know from Victoria are Campbell's from Rutherglen.
Oh yes,
Giant Steps from Yarra Valley, Styx from Yarra Valley, Heathcote Estate, obviously Yabby Lake from Mornington, mm-hmm. Scotchman's Hill from Bellarine, Murraduck from Murraduck and Taran Roses from Nagambi, from Victoria, from South Australia. Mm-hmm. I'll give you a few. We have Two Hands from Barossa.
Yep.
We have Mitchell from Clare, Shaw and Smith from Adelaide Hills, and mm-hmm. Thorne Clark from Eden Valley.
Right.
We also represent brands from Tassie, WA. We import brands from France, Louis Roederer, which mm-hmm. has the prestigious Cristal. We get from Reims in Champagne area, mm-hmm. Louis Jardot from Burgundy. Mm-hmm. We represent a number of Italian wines, Poliziano from Tuscany, Vietti yep. from Piedmont, and also represent Evian and Badoit Water from France near Lake Geneva.
Right, right.
In addition to that, we also represent Riedel Glassware from Austria and Plum Glassware, which was developed in Australia but made in Slovakia.
Oh, right, yes.
And one of the big trends over the last 6 to 7 years, of course, has been New Zealand wines.
Yes.
We represent Dog Point, Catalina Sounds and Crowded House from Marlborough.
Yes.
We represent Felton Road and Nanny Goat from Central Otago, Craggy Range from Martinborough and Tiawa from Hawke's Bay, above a number of other brands. But that gives you a bit of a guide to some of the premium brands that we do represent.
Now, does anyone have any idea how many labels, because a winemaker could have 13 or 14 different labels, how many labels are competing on the market by the time you take Australia's more than 2,000 wineries and then you add the imports? How many labels are we? You know, I know in America you go into some of these big wine shops and there are about 8,000 different labels confronting you.
Well, look, from an on-premise perspective, the labels have doubled in about the last 3 to 4 years.
Now, by on-premise, for those that don't know,
restaurant and cafe.
And pubs and wine bars, not pubs.
Restaurants in pubs.
Which is very fashionable now.
Very fashionable. But what we're seeing a great increase, of course, is cafes.
Yes.
Cafes and restaurants are growing enormously.
Yep.
So, we've seen a tremendous growth in those areas, and as I said, New Zealand wine has really dominated from a white wine perspective over the last 6 to 7 years. Calling it, I think they call it the Savalanche.
The Savalanche.
About 6 years ago. Yeah.
Yeah. As some say that I was speaking to Ross Brown the other day, who's a pretty smart bloke, and he said that wine's a bit like fashion; it goes in cycles. And I think he was saying, and this is a couple of years ago, that Sauv Blanc is on, at his estimation, the year was then 12 or 13 of what he'd call a normal 15-year popularity cycle. Do you think he's sort of on the mark
I think all Australian producers are hoping that,
yes.
you know, because we have seen Chardonnay dominated for many years.
Yep.
And as we say, it was like an avalanche. We saw Sauv Blanc coming. And New Zealand Sauv Blanc has been dominating. So I think a lot of Australian producers are hoping that is the trend, but we're not seeing it at the moment in sales.
Right.
You know,
right.
the first item that any most restaurateurs and hotels order is Sauv Blanc. You know, that's the first one they lead out on.
And I think you market the Sepp Gruner Veltliner, don't you?
We do,
that's
yes. one of yours. Yes, it is one of ours, yeah.
Lovely
from
wine,
Austria.
Too.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. There is a lot of... A lot of imported wine has come to Australia, predominantly over the last 5 or 6 years, when the dollar has been definitely in our favour, and we've been able to import cheap European wine. We can still do that now. It's still around 70 cents. It's not like the US dollar,
right.
where we have found it difficult to export because it's been over the $1 mark.
Yeah,
but. You know, for imports, imports have grown enormously on wine lists around Australia.
Yep. Now, growing wine grapes and making wine is only one part of the equation for many of Australia's 2,000-plus wineries. To get your label noticed, either in the restaurant or on the market generally, retail or elsewhere, especially for many small family wine businesses who struggle to make a profit, and many who rely on the wet, that's the wine equalisation tax rebate of up to $500,000 to stay afloat. Then there's the stranglehold of the big supermarket duopoly, which must, in retailing. It's not a pretty picture, is it, Frank, for some of our winemakers?
No, it's been very difficult. The industry, I've been in the industry since 92, in roles of CFO and CEO of these companies, and, you know, we've had some pretty good times.
Yep.
But the last 10 years have been very tough for our industry. The retail chains have grown enormously. Dan Murphy, I think, has got 195 stores, which is of course owned by Woolworths. First Choice has got 95 stores, which is owned by Coles. Aldi is growing every month.
Their wine section at Aldi is almost doubled.
They're 355 stores, and they haven't got any in Queensland and SA.
Right.
So they've got plenty of upsides too. So, and within those stores, most of you know, what a lot of the shelf space is now taken by buyer's own brand.
What's buyer's own brand?
Buyer's own brand is their own label, private label.
So it's a supermarket. Exactly. And this is a bit of vertical integration, is it? Do they actually go and buy wineries, or do they just create?
No, they create a label, and then they have proprietary ownership in that label.
Yeah.
And you know, the consumer wouldn't know it was a supermarket label.
Yes, you know, it's very often it's a critter label, isn't it?
Yeah, you know, it could
with
be.
A frog
could be.
Or a, you know.
I think that when we talk about Sauv Blanc, I think Dan Murphy's and First Choice would probably have at least 10 plus of their own Sauv Blanc labels.
Which makes it very difficult for the consumer. And very annoying for the multi-generation, say fifth or sixth generation wine families who've built up, you know, over 90 or 100 years, invested in creating their brand and label.
It's very difficult, very difficult, and specifically when I think their strategic mandate is to get to at least 30% of their shelf space as their own brands. And, of course, that does cause a bit of pain to a lot of the local brands because they're being replaced by some of the buyer's own brands.
Yeah, because the margins are greater. And, of course, margins, in restaurants, I suppose the restaurants, it's a bit of a battle between... And I know I order wine by the glass in restaurants, which can be the most expensive way to go because very often the markups in restaurants for lower quality wine are higher in restaurants, you know, than...
They are, No, they are. I think what we're seeing in restaurants is that that wines by the glass is one of the trends that has really grown again over the last 5 or 6 years. There's a lot more choice out there. You usually only get one... You know, one Cabernet, one Shiraz, you know, one Riesling. Now you've got a number of wines that that can be bought by the glass. Yes, there is a premium to that, but it's it has got its advantages too. If you only want to try one glass of white and a quality white before you have your meal, you might be a red drinker. It's some advantage. You are paying a premium, and I think the average wine by the glass in Australia nationally is $11.
Jeez, so not that's the restaurants. That's
the average wine by the glass. Of course, there's a lot higher, and there's a number that are lower. But that was last year, 2014.
Mm. And of course, the trends are too. There are the singles among us, single household.
Yep.
As a percentage of the population is growing.
Yep.
And of course, the 0.05 drink driving. That you know, when you go out and if. You have a few drinks, well, that's it. You know, unless you catch public transport or a taxi home.
Yeah.
That's
That is definitely another, another reason. Definitely another reason.
And there's a couple of other things threatening the industry too. Of course, the big producers and the spirit manufacturers are saying, "Hey, let's reform the alcohol tax." And it's complicated. We won't get into that. But basically, let's tax wine at the same percentage or same rate as spirits are. There's a big call for that, isn't there?
Well, the spirit, I've had a lot of experience in spirits back in the early 80s when we used to bring in Scotch from Scotland.
Yeah,
we would bring in a case of Scotch for about $24 landed.
How long ago was this?
Back in the early 80s.
80s, right, yeah.
Yep, $24 landed. Yep. Before we could sell it, we'd have to pay about 70% duty.
Right.
So it made it $94,
and
then we'd, of course, have to add our margin to it, which might have been 10%.
Yep.
And then on top of that, we'd have to add sales tax before we sold it because we're a wholesaler. So another 21%.
Yep.
So you've got 70% already going to duty and then another 21% at the wholesale price in those days going to sales tax.
Right.
So spirits are very heavily... very heavily dutied. Wine is not as much as that, but they are talking about having wine volume by alcohol. So a 4 litre cask
that's going to go through the roof
would cost a lot more than obviously than a bottle of wine.
Yeah. Now the cask, mate. Now a lot of people don't know that the world of wine now, there are bulk wine negotiants, brokers, because most of the wine slushes around the world, as do the currents in the ocean, in huge bladders, in container-sized bladders now because of the technology. And there's often a lot of excess and surplus wine that has to find a home.
Yeah,
and the wine that you and I might talk about over dinner or something, the premium wine represents, what, less than 1% of the entire market?
That's
and yet it attracts all the white noise, the critics and the whatever.
Yep.
And the rest of the population say, well, Yeah, that's nice, but we'll just go on drinking our wine at, you know.
Yeah. Well, we've had above average vintages globally in 2015 from the big producers, France, Italy and Spain.
Yeah.
And they're going to continue to put pressure on our industry, you know, and definitely prices in Australia. So there'll be some cheap prices of imports coming out for sure.
And the other thing, of course, in parts of Europe, in France, you go to Paris and it's easy to tell the tourists because they're the only ones drinking wine these days.
Yeah.
You know, the younger people are drinking spirits and beer, the same in Spain.
Yes.
Now, and of course, back home, there's the traditional retail. There's heavy discounting, the virtual labels we've talked about, and they're clean skin warehouses. And for people that don't know what clean skins are, they're wines with a very basic label, not branded. That just tells you the wine and the district it came from. And, of course, there are online outlets like Vinomofo. They must be challenging Dan Murphy's. And wineries selling direct and the growing influence of social media, where the winemaker can bypass the likes of myself or the critics or the commentators and go direct. So what's happening today and how's marketing changing and how's that going to affect both the producer and the customer?
Well, look, as I said, the last 5-6 years have been very challenging for the Australian producers. They haven't been able to export their wine because of the strong dollar, and they've had an influx of European wines come in and also New Zealand wines come in, and they've had some strong vintages. So they've got to find other ways to move their product or else just disgorge it and lose money.
Yep.
So they are looking at many other areas because consumption has been fairly flat for the last 24 months, 2 years.
Mm-hmm. That's sales, wine consumption.
Wine consumption in Australia. But it's changed. Quite, changed. I mean, sales of Australian-produced wine 10 years ago was 93% in Australia and 7% imports.
Yep.
That was in 2004.
Yep.
In 2014, Australian-produced wine consumed is 85% as compared to imports 15%. So you've seen a big difference in that. So, of course, it's cutting the lunch of a lot of Australian producers, and the imports market has grown quite considerably, and especially New Zealand, because I think New Zealand is 64% of what we import. If you call them an import. I know they're not far away, but they are an import. And France is 16%.
Oh, right. So it's New Zealand and France and the rest.
And the rest, exactly.
Right.
Yeah.
What about the wine industry saying, well, is China going to be the salvation? That's very long term, isn't it?
Well, China's middle class is definitely growing.
Yeah.
But what we're seeing here now is that the Chinese are buying Australian vineyards.
Yep.
So they're actually taking proprietary in Australian vineyards.
I think there's five in the Yarra Valley they've got today,
well,
isn't there?
Well, Styx was recently sold about 2 months to a Chinese consortium.
Right.
So, if they're buying their own wineries, they, obviously they'll be producing there and bringing their own product across to China. So I don't know if that's going to be a salvation for some of the other wineries. Maybe some of the big boys will get in there, but I wouldn't look at China as being a silver bullet.
No. So you think in future, what some of us may be driving Great Wall Utes and drinking Great Wall wine, because COFCO in China huge, aren't they?
They're massive. They're one of the biggest companies. Yeah, they're massive. Yeah.
They're going to flex their muscle.
Exactly,
because the Chinese are busy buying up assets, not only in wine, but they're buying assets around the world, aren't they?
They are. That's right. Yeah. Yeah, but we have noticed that, and there is a lot of Australian winery still on the market.
Yep.
And obviously the Chinese have got the dollars, and the appetite now, as I say, their middle class is definitely growing to buy more. You know, we're seeing it in real estate.
Yes, of course.
You know, and that's just another way of having real estate.
Tip of the iceberg.
Yeah, exactly.
Now, what about countries like Brazil, where there's a wealthy rising middle class, and maybe long-term India? In terms of wine, both wine production and
I haven't seen too much of that as yet.
No,
I know, definitely haven't. We haven't seen too much from Brazil, and India. Yes, the palate is a lot different in India.
Yeah, of course.
Obviously, a lot of wine varieties and styles don't match the food that is eaten there by the masses. But there is obviously a big opportunity for growth from those two areas.
Australia really must look to Southeast Asia and the Asian market other than China, because they're starting to manufacture what Jancis Robinson called, I think, new latitude wines.
Yeah.
And even the Japanese, with their Koshu variety, have long been known for rice wine or sake and beer, they're starting to get a bit of a taste for wine. So the map is changing rapidly, isn't it?
It is changing. I think the one fortunate thing about Australia is that we can produce most wine varieties. We've got tremendous different climates in our other states, and we're very fortunate. We can produce a lot of wine varieties and style that should match match most countries.
Now, the relationship between money, taste, and wine is a complex one, especially where price is invariably seen as the proxy for quality. As we know, that quality doesn't always rise with price, and very often you see people when they're out, they're governed by, it's a battle, isn't it, to think, well, the dearer wine is going to necessarily be that much better than the wine. It's a complex sort of equation, isn't it, or triangle, taste, money and wine.
It is, that's right. I think with the advent of so many new labels out there, I think that and a lot of imported wine, which a lot of the general public have no idea of what the price should be.
Mm-hmm.
There's been some pretty sharp marketing out there, and I think there's been some windfalls for some people in pricing of that. I think what we're seeing now is that the younger generation are buying more on region.
Yep.
And we're seeing, obviously, some growth areas, but region seems to be the one, because when you don't know what who a label's from or is produced by, you look as where is it produced.
Yes.
So you look at, steady areas like Barossa and like McLaren Vale and these areas, you say, okay, well, it should be a good wine.
Right. Is anyone drinking, this is a pet of mine, so I'm sorry to introduce this left of field here, sparkling Shiraz. There are a couple of wines that Australia can claim really as its own. Not sparkling reds, because they've been made by the French and Italians for years, but sparkling Shiraz. And sparkling reds are starting to get a bit of a serious category. Is anyone drinking them?
We haven't, from our portfolio, it's very small still.
Yeah.
Very small.
Yeah.
I mean, the sparkling wine wine variety is one that's growing enormously.
Now, is that Prosecco, of course, is it?
Or? Well, that's imported, but Prosecco, and there are some Proseccos, from Australia, definitely. But sparkling wine and champagne is still growing.
Yeah.
So that there's a trend for that, but sparkling Shiraz, not really, not at this stage. I think it's
a niche market.
It's a niche market, definitely.
Now, it's got a, this is really the brand of all time, must be for luxury champagne. I mean, if you're talking about a job, not necessarily the best wine, maybe the best blended, but they have been absolutely brilliant over the years at marketing generically the name, champagne and the different brands, haven't they?
They have, and I think we've been fortunate again with some of the pricing and our strong dollar over the past. We've seen French champagne sold at $40 and under sub $40 for some of the some serious brands out there. We haven't seen too much discounting at I'd say maybe the top four or five.
Right.
But there's been some very good pricing on French champagne, and we have some local sparkling wine which is getting close to that mark.
Which is the local, do you think?
Well, Arras from
Edgar. I believe Andrew Perry's got his Apogee now, and he wants to knock Ed off his perch.
So we've got some good stuff, but when it's so close to the $40 mark, $35, a lot of people are just ticking champagne and say, look, I can't go wrong with a $40 bottle of French champagne.
Yeah, but what about the grower champagnes? Now, are they threatening the traditional brands like Louis Roederer and those brands? Because there are a lot of growth in small grower champagne and co-op champagne.
Yeah, I don't have the stats on that. I mean, we're still obviously growing. Louis Roederer is still a very very strong champagne for us and in growth. So, but we know that the sector is growing. Not certain about some of the smaller ones, how they're going, but wouldn't be surprised if they had good growth too.
And we're getting towards the end of time, but There's the old saying, of course, it's been around a while, and, it's an interesting equation, this. You have wine plus money and no taste. Well, it could be celebrity wines. And then you've got wine plus taste and no money. It's long been known the easiest way to make a small fortune, and just ask Dave Rathbone, in the wine business, is to start with a large one. Now, do you think there's got to be Alistair Purbrick at Tobilk has long said that there should be a culling of the number of small producers. And if Alistair gets his way, because it's got to be rationalisation in the industry, half of James Halliday's top 40 wineries would be out of business. What's going to happen, do you think, in the wine business? Does it need to rationalise in Australia, the local...
Look, being always private enterprise, I don't like to reduce any growth or any entrepreneurial person who would like to grow grapes and produce wine in Australia.
Yep.
I think it's a great industry to be in. It is tough. I mean, it has been tough, and maybe this will happen. There will be a rationalisation reduction in the number of the smaller wineries that are out there because as I say, globalisation with imports flooding in here at a cheap price, and it may happen, but it's a hard one to really look another 5 years ahead. We've seen dramatic change in the last 5 years, and we will continue to see change.
Finally, what's your favourite wine? Do you have a favourite varietal?
Look, I love Shiraz.
You're a Shiraz fan.
I wouldn't mark one label down as a favourite.
Yeah,
I do like Shiraz. I like and specifically from McLaren Vale or from Barossa.
Yeah.
I think they produce great Shiraz. Heathcote also.
Yeah,
I don't want to leave out too many areas, but I do. But we produce a fantastic Shiraz.
That's the opera house of our wines, isn't it, Shiraz?
I think so.
Well, look, Frank, thanks for your time today. We've skated over a few things. Thank you for sharing your knowledge and time today. It's been a pleasure talking to you.
Thanks, Michael. Thanks for having you.
Good. Well, that's about your lot for now. My research material was sourced from my home library, winebiz.com. Money, Taste and Wine, a new book coming out yet to hit the market by the wine economist, Mike Veseth, and of wineaccess.com. This has been another Heard It Through the Grapevine on Vision Australia Radio, heard on stations around Australia via the Community Radio Network. It's cheers from me, Michael Hintz, and please drink moderately.
Heard It Through the Grapevine is a production of Vision Australia Radio. Sound information.